basic services in Afghanistan are collapsing, and food and other life-saving aid is about to run out.
Helping Afghanistan's most vulnerable. It's Thursday, September 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, women prosecutors fear the Taliban. Vaccine efficacy against long COVID. Remembering 9/11, U.S. veterans reflect on Afghanistan. It's all on today's VOA Asia. UN officials will meet next week to discuss a plan to raise $606 million for life-saving humanitarian assistance for nearly 11 million people in Afghanistan until the end of the year. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns Afghanistan is facing a looming humanitarian catastrophe. The UN chief will travel to Geneva to convene next Monday's meeting to gain the support of the international community to address the growing needs in the country. The United Nations reports nearly half of Afghanistan's population of 38 million needs humanitarian aid. Among them are 3.5 million people internally displaced by conflict. The UN Children's Fund reports 600,000 children under age 5 are suffering from severe acute malnutrition, a dangerous condition that could kill them if they do not receive emergency aid. Spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Lajerke, says the appeal will provide treatment for more than 1 million children and women suffering from acute malnutrition. He says the appeal also aims to deliver critical food, essential health services, water and sanitation, emergency education, shelter, and other relief.
Humanitarian organizations have decades of experience in delivering relief in Afghanistan. This year alone, 8 million people have received assistance. But basic services in Afghanistan are collapsing, and food and other life-saving aid is about to run out.
The World Food Program reports 1 in 3 people in Afghanistan is going hungry. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary says the humanitarian crisis unfolding in the country will worsen during the fast-approaching winter season. He says WFP is racing to pre-position food before the snow cuts off access to large areas of the country.
In just a few weeks, sadly, our food will run out. We have called for resources and we are urgently requiring $200 million to assist 14 million people between now and the end of 2021.
UN agencies vow to remain in Afghanistan and provide humanitarian aid despite increasing insecurity under Taliban rule. UN officials say they have been present in the country for nearly 4 decades and have experience in working with different authorities, even the Taliban, when the militant group last held power between 1996 and 2001. The UN assures international donors none of their money will end up in government hands. UN officials say all money is channeled to implementing agencies on the ground who will put it to good use. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Myanmar's shadow government announces defensive war. South Korea fights fake news, but critics claim it's gagging the press. New Zealand to overhaul terror laws after Auckland supermarket stabbings. China chases rejuvenation with control of tycoons and society. Hong Kong police arrest organizers of annual Tiananmen Square vigils. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Female prosecutors in Afghanistan fear the Taliban and thousands of prisoners released by the militant group. These women who are still in Afghanistan are calling on the international community for help. VOA's Farkunda Paimani reports.
The female employees of the Attorney General's office in Kabul say that their lives are in danger. They say that they fear for their lives under the Taliban because the group has claimed the killings of many prosecutors and government officials in the past 20 years. These Afghan prosecutors want the international community to help them relocate to a safer place.
Certainly, we do not feel safe. We could not even go out of our houses. We do not have peace of mind at any time. We want the international community to seriously make a decision about women, especially prosecutors, because their lives are in danger. Every moment it's possible that they are being assassinated.
Female prosecutors say that they also feel threatened by the thousands of prisoners who were released by the Taliban last month when the group took control of the country.
We feel threatened not only by the Taliban, but also by the prisoners who were released. We have videos and documents that show that the Taliban have said they will target prosecutors. Some of our colleagues have already received messages and calls from those who were in prison, saying that they will take their revenge. Therefore, we do not feel safe at all.
Female prosecutors are also concerned that the Taliban would roll back the gains made in women's rights in the past two decades in Afghanistan, including the rights to work.
I do not think that under the new government, women would be able to resume their work. It is possible that some women, such as physicians and teachers, would be allowed to work.
Last month, the Taliban urged women to stay home, calling it a temporary measure to protect women until the group could come up with a new procedure. The Taliban have said that they are not against women's education and work, but women activists are deeply skeptical of the militant promises. Farkhunda Paimani, VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, new research about vaccines and so-called long COVID. Happening now in Asia, Indonesia's justice and human rights minister visited the site of a massive fire in an overcrowded prison near Jakarta that burned early Wednesday, killing at least 41 inmates and injuring 80 others. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. New research shows that coronavirus vaccines not only offer protection against infection and serious illness, but may also help prevent so-called long COVID, where symptoms can last for weeks or months. VOA's Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
South African factory manager Bradley Solomons caught COVID-19 in July last year and spent more than 20 days in hospital. Months later, he was still struggling with daily life.
I still feel that sometimes I lose my memory for 3 to 5 minutes and I don't know what I was doing or whatsoever, and I still cough. Now and then my throat is still sore.
There are no official figures, but it's thought millions of people worldwide who contracted the coronavirus have also suffered from so-called long COVID, with symptoms lasting longer than 4 weeks. The condition remains poorly understood, says British campaigner Ondine Sherwood.
People are still getting told that it's due to anxiety. Some doctors don't really fully understand this condition.
New research from King's College London suggests that coronavirus vaccines halve the risk of suffering from long COVID for the very low number of people who get infected after vaccination. The scientists base their research on Britain's Zoe COVID study app, which tracked the self-reported symptoms of 1.2 million people between December 2020 and July this year. 0.2% of vaccinated respondents reported being infected with coronavirus. Of those, 5% reported suffering from long COVID, compared to 11% of unvaccinated people. The findings will fuel the debate over whether to offer vaccines to children. Another recent study in Britain found that one in seven children suffers from long COVID 3 months after infection, with headaches and fatigue listed as the most common symptoms. Several countries, including the US, have already begun vaccination programs for those 12 years and over. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Finally on VOA Asia, in 2002, VOA's Kane Farabaugh, then a reporter for the U.S. military, visited Afghanistan in the early stages of America's 20-year presence in the country. With the U.S. military engagement now over, Farabaugh follows up with those he met in those early years to discuss the U.S. withdrawal and the mission's legacy.
Lawrence Taylor worked as an air traffic controller in San Jose, California on September 11, 2001, just 4 months later. He was among the first uniformed members of the military on the ground at Bagram Airfield in Afghanistan.
We came here with basically nothing, and we set up an air traffic control facility from the ground on up.
When I first met Taylor in May of 2002, serving with the U.S. Air National Guard in Afghanistan, flight operations at Bagram Airfield had picked up pace as about 7,500 service members were deployed to the country. Most serving at the time of my reporting assignment for the American Forces Network were part of Operation Enduring Freedom, the military's official name for the mission to eliminate the Al-Qaeda terrorist network that used Afghanistan as a haven to launch attacks.
As a Guard unit going out and doing this stuff, this is the first time that we've ever done this.
Archer 564, negative contact, 28 comms with traffic.
Steve Hutcherson was working the radar system at an aviation facility in St. Joseph, Missouri during the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks.
How's our flash doing? Is he getting ready to launch?
When I visited him in a radar trailer near the flight line of Bagram Airfield in 2002, he had been in country nearly 5 months.
You're a part of it. You're not just watching it on TV and now you're over here and actually, you know, part of, you know, getting things straightened out. I don't know. It's a pretty patriotic thing.
Hutcherson's first combat deployment wasn't his last.
Was home for about 6 months, and then we got the call again, and we got to go over to Iraq and spend a little bit of time over there.
It wasn't hard to track down Hutcherson 19 years after we first met. He still works for the same air traffic control squadron in Missouri he deployed with in Afghanistan and Iraq. Only now, he's a civilian with the unit after retiring from the Air National Guard.
People in now, they've known nothing but Afghanistan, and nothing had really changed since when we first went in there and we took control of the areas and everything.
Hutcherson says he wasn't surprised by the rapid advance of the Taliban in regaining control of Afghanistan.
I would have been more surprised if we watched the news and saw the Afghan army fighting the Taliban. That would have shocked me much more.
But Hutcherson doesn't believe the end result changes the success of the mission.
The mission was to stop another 9/11 style attack. And it's been 20 years since it happened, and we haven't had one.
For me, it was more personal than political, just because of the fact that I felt like I had an obligation to do something, and that's why I was there.
19 years after I met him in the control tower at Bagram Airfield, Taylor invited me to visit with him at his suburban Chicago home.
I think when I showed up there, it might have been a little over 100, but when I left, I think there might have been about 8,000 people, maybe 9,000.
Taylor served in Afghanistan for almost a year, also later deploying to Iraq.
This was the unit, the F-15 unit out of Oregon.
Before retiring, he received one of the highest honors in the U.S. Air Force, the Air National Guard Senior Non-Commissioned Officer of the Year Award. Today, he works for the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, and watched the fall of the Afghan government and the loss of U.S. strategic resources, including Bagram Airfield, unfold in recent weeks.
I thought we'd be there forever.
Taylor says the current circumstance in Afghanistan does little to change the way he views how he and his fellow military members serve their country.
Me, I'm glad I got to go. At the time, I think it was worth it. I still do, but I'm sure I would get a good argument from a lot of people.
It's an argument that policymakers, politicians, historians, and voters will also debate for decades to come, as the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan closed amid the chaotic and dangerous evacuation of tens of thousands of U.S. citizens, troops, and their allies at the Kabul airport. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Enjoy the day. Be well and stay safe.